Nicholas Civello ran the Kansas City crime family for 3 decades. His road to the top was not always smooth, but once he was empowered, the family dominated the underworld of Kansas City. I'm Brian McCoy. Welcome to The Mob Files. Okay, everyone, welcome into episode 1 of The Mob Files. Today, our subject is Nicholas Civello, who was the boss of the Kansas City crime family from 1953 until his death in 1983, making him one of the longest tenured mob bosses in history. Civello was born in 1912 in Kansas City, and coincidentally, this was right around the same time that the Kansas City family was founded. Civello's life in crime began very early on. He had multiple arrests before the age of 20, primarily for burglary and theft. Now, early on, Civello did not fall in line with what the current mafia family leadership wanted. He and his brother Carl Cork Civello actually started their own crew, decided to do their own thing. Now, this obviously pissed off the mafia leadership, but for a couple of reasons. For one, they wanted Civello and his crew to work for them to join the organization. But to make things even worse, Civello's crew was accused of robbing mafia-protected card games in Kansas City. Things actually got so heated that Civello was forced to flee for Chicago in the early 40s, and it's a good thing he left when he did. Several of his associates were killed back in Kansas City. Civello returned to Kansas City probably because he thought he was safe, but he wasn't. There was an attempt on his life in 1946. For whatever reason, he was talking to a sheriff's deputy in his car outside of a store in Kansas City when another vehicle pulled up and opened fire. The deputy was killed, but Civello walked away unharmed. Civello again fled for Chicago. He eventually came back, and apparently there had been some backroom deal-making done to smooth things over for his safe passage. At this time, he started driving for Tony Gizzo, who was a high-ranking figure in the Kansas City family. Gizzo took over as boss in 1950 and promoted Civello when he did so. Gizzo died in 1953, and this put Civello, who was his top lieutenant, in line for the top job. After some internal politicking and some convincing of some of the older members of the family, Civello was named boss of the Kansas City crime family. Civello's entrance onto the national stage occurred in 1957 at the infamous Apalachin Meeting. I'm sure most people know this, but the Apalachin Meeting was a conference of the top mafia figures throughout the United States at a farmhouse in rural New York. Local law enforcement caught on to the suspicious activity and raided the property, making multiple arrests, but Civello was not among them. However, one of the fallouts from the Apalachin debacle was increased scrutiny on the mafia throughout the United States, and Civello and the Kansas City family were no exception to this. Civello was hauled before a Jackson County grand jury in 1958 and a federal grand jury in Chicago in 1959. Ultimately, Civello avoided prosecution, but he was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in 1959 by a New York federal grand jury. The investigation into Civello that actually had the most teeth had to do with his taxes. He was accused of failing to file tax returns in the late 1950s for multiple years. Eventually, he had to provide some information, and it shed some light on how he made his money. He claimed a salary from a gambling operation in the city, and he also made a lot of money on real estate holdings, including at hotels where prostitutes were known to work out of. Now, gambling was a huge source of income for Civello and the family, and ultimately it was the area that would land them in the most hot water and the most trouble. But that trouble comes later in our story, primarily in the 1970s. The next area we're going to discuss is labor racketeering. Like many crime families, the Civellos were heavily interested in union activities, and Nick Civello had a strong influence and power with the Teamsters Union in Kansas City. Now, in the 50s and 60s, Teamsters Union Local 41 was led by a man named Roy Lee Williams. Civello forged a friendship with Williams that would pay off in a big way. Civello used the friendship to steer money and loans his way. One example was a scheme where membership dues would be raised to pay for one doctor's visit each for each union member. Civello made his money by getting a kickback from the doctor. Williams initially opposed the plan, but ultimately, after several acts of intimidation by the family and as well as seeking advice from Jimmy Hoffa, he relented and went along with the scheme. Now, later on, Williams became a trustee of the Teamsters Pension Fund, which was implemented thanks to Hoffa's work in the mid-1950s. The fund essentially served as a bank for the mob to finance its interest. One of these interests was casinos. The mob would use individuals or groups working as a front to get the loans from the pension fund, to get the loans from Hoffa. Once they received the loan, they would then turn control over to the mob. This allowed the mob to make truckloads of cash from skimming profits off of newly built casinos in Las Vegas. Civello was not going to miss out on this. He used Williams as a pawn to make sure he got his cut. Williams, among others, was charged in 1962 for an embezzlement and kickback scheme. One of the other men charged was named Floyd Hayes, who eventually flipped under pressure from law enforcement. It was believed that Hayes' testimony could put Williams and maybe even Civella in hot water and potentially have them looking at jail time. Hayes was murdered in the summer of 1964 in front of his wife, who was also wounded in the attack. As I said earlier, gambling was a huge source of income for the Civellas and for the Kansas City family. They ran their gambling operation primarily out of the Northview Social Club, which was nicknamed the Trap by family members. Federal agents were able to successfully tap the phones at the Trap in early 1970. That year, the Kansas City Chiefs were playing the Minnesota Vikings in the Super Bowl, and the Chiefs were huge underdogs. But naturally, all of the local money in Kansas City was on the Chiefs to pull off the upset, and this became a nightmare for the sportsbook operation when the Chiefs won. Civella was caught on wiretap, complaining about the money that they lost because of the game. He was indicted that fall along with other members of the family. The feds identified several key witnesses. One such witness was Lester Moore. Moore sold vehicles in the suburbs, but more importantly, he was a big-time gambler. This leads us to the bloodiest part of our story. This next part of our story is about the four brothers who decided to take on the Kansas City crime family. There were six Spiro brothers in all, but we're going to focus in on the four who had ties to organized crime: Nick, Carl, Mike, and Joe. The Spiro brothers were in the game in Kansas City, but they weren't affiliated with the Civellas. Now, this wouldn't necessarily be a problem. As long as they were bringing in money and kicking up an appropriate amount of the profits to the Civellas, there's no reason they couldn't have coexisted. The Spiros started to cause problems for the Civellas, and things reached a boiling point in the early 70s. Around that time, Nick Spiro began to gain influence with the Teamsters Union, and for the reasons we already talked about, that would hit very close to home for the Civellas. The control of the unions was vital to their operations. Now, around that same time, if you'll remember, Nick Civella, the boss, was facing those federal gambling charges. And the story goes that the Civellas ordered the Spiro brothers, specifically Carl and Nick, to take out the Fed's key witness, Lester Moore, but the brothers refused. Now, this was a bold move by the brothers. You couldn't really say no to the Civellas at that point in time. They were the top dogs in the city, and they had the manpower to enforce it. They had put enough people on the ground by the time the Spiros even came along to make the message crystal clear. If you wanted to operate in Kansas City, you had to run it through them. Ultimately, the decision to refuse this direct order triggered a 10-year feud that the Spiros had no chance of winning. Nick was the first of the Spiro brothers to pay the ultimate price. He was found shot to death in the trunk of a car on April 11, 1973, in the northern Kansas City suburbs. He was 37 years old. You would probably think that Carl would have been taken out alongside his brother Nick, as he directly refused the order as well, but Carl was in prison at the time of his brother's murder. He was spared for the time being. The next victim of the feud was Spiro associate John Brocata. Brocata was found dead in the trunk of his car at Kansas City International Airport in the fall of 1976. The next part of our story takes us to 1978, more specifically May 16th, 1978. On this night, the three remaining Spiro brothers, Carl, Mike, and Joe, were drinking at the Virginian Tavern in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Mike and Joe were drinking in the booth, but Carl was up at the bar. Three armed men stormed into the tavern and opened fire on the brothers. Mike and Joe were sitting ducks in the booth, but Carl actually almost managed to escape. He got outside but was shot trying to cross the street. Joe and Carl were wounded, and Carl was paralyzed from the waist down. Mike Spiro was killed. He was 39 years old. After Mike was killed, Carl and Joe kicked their plans for revenge into hyperdrive. In 1979 alone, they made three attempts on the life of Carl Tuffy DeLuna, who was the street boss, the underboss of the Civella crime family. The first attempt, they shot at him with a high-powered rifle outside of his house but missed. The next two attempts involved car bombs, and for the second one, Joe Spiro was convicted. In the summer of 1980, when Joe Spiro was free pending appeal, he went to visit a storage north of the city. When he got near the unit, a bomb inside it detonated. Joe Spiro was killed instantly. He was 48 years old. Now, there's some controversy surrounding Joe's death and whether the Kansas City family was actually responsible for it. The authorities who investigated the incident concluded that Joe had been trying to make another bomb and it had accidentally detonated. This is plausible given his previous attempts to use explosives to take revenge on the Civellas. However, an FBI agent testified years later that the bomb had been booby-trapped by order of the Civellas. He was told this information by a confidential informant. Joe's death also allowed more information about the attack at the Virginia Tavern to be released. Joe had written a letter to his family, IDing the shooters in that attack with instructions to only release it after his death. One of the shooters identified was Carl Tuffy DeLuna, again the underboss of the Kansas City crime family, and the man who Joe Spiro had targeted with his homemade bomb plot. Now at this point, I wouldn't blame you for wondering if the Spiros would choose to back off. After all, three out of the four Spiro brothers were dead, and the one surviving was confined to a wheelchair thanks to their earlier attack. But Carl Spiro was not that lucky. Nick Civella had been sent back to prison in the late 70s for violation of his parole. In 1980, he was caught multiple times talking to his brother Carl Civella and his nephew Tony Civella, making it clear that he wanted them to close out the file on the Spiro brothers. In 1983, a relative spotted a car bomb under Carl's vehicle. Luckily, it was removed and never detonated. Also in 1983, the Kansas City family experienced a change in leadership. Nicholas Civella passed away after a prolonged illness, and Carl Cork Civella and Carl Tuffy DeLuna took over the family. Unfortunately for Carl Spiro, this change in leadership did not change the family's plans for him. As I said, the Civellas had long memories. They didn't mind waiting things out, taking their time, waiting for the perfect opportunity to strike. Now, Carl Spiro had opened a used car lot in Kansas City as his next business venture. And if he was scared for his life, he had a funny way of showing it. He didn't go into hiding, and this car lot he opened up was right near some mafia hotspots. Apparently, he wasn't worried. But one day in January 1984, when Carl was working in the office at the car lot, a bomb exploded. The building was leveled, and Carl was killed instantly. He was 44 years old. It didn't matter that Nick Civella was dead. He had given the order, and it was going to be carried out one way or another. This story, more than any other, shows the true power the Civellas had in Kansas City. They had wiped an entire family off the map and faced no consequences for it. A year after Nick Civella's death, so 1984, a RICO case shed light on just how profitable the profit-skimming operations at the Las Vegas casinos had been for the Civellas. The investigation revealed that they had successfully skimmed at least $2 million, and that was just the numbers the feds could track. This indictment was possible thanks to law enforcement work in the late 70s in Kansas City. Officers had successfully tapped the phones of mob figures throughout the city and also various mob hangouts, including the Villa Capri, which was a favorite of the Civella family. At the Villa Capri, they caught conversations detailing the profit-skimming operations at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. This case also revealed that the Kansas City family had acted in concert with the Chicago outfit as well as the Cleveland and Milwaukee crime families. After Nick Civella's death, the family wound down its operations significantly, whether that was by choice, because of RICO, and many families throughout the United States faced a similar fate. It is known that Carl Cork Civella and Carl Tuffy DeLuna both served short stints as boss of the family, and that Nick Civella's nephew Tony Civella also served as boss for a while. It's believed that the family is still somewhat active in operations such as gambling and loan sharking. However, the same reports put the number of made men at 10 or less. Kansas City family doesn't get the same kind of attention as the Five families or some of the other families throughout the United States, but there was a time, I mean decades, that they had enormous power and influence, not only in Kansas City, but stretching all the way to places like Las Vegas, working hand in hand with other families. And they were at their most powerful under the leadership of Nicholas Civella. Thank you so much for listening to episode 1 of The Mob Files. If you enjoyed, please subscribe and share widely. Thanks again and have a great day.